Gloria Jacobs, not Lorraine Butson, deputy member Troy Melville, community member, and Bill
Rambanis.
2.2, apologies, there is nil. 2.3, approved leave of absence, nil. 2.4, resignation. Councillor David Van Vliet resigned on the 1st of May 2014 as the presiding member for the Finance Committee. Item 3, response to previous questions taken on notice. 3.1, questions from the public and Audit Finance Committee meeting held on Wednesday the 19th of February 2014, nil. 3.2, questions from committee members and Audit and Finance Committee member meeting held on Wednesday the 19th of February 2014 is nil. Item 4, public time. Nil. 4.1, public question time. We have nil. Public statement time. We have nil. Question 5, questions from members without notice. Is there any questions from members without notice?
No, no.
Question item number 6, declaration by members to have given due consideration to all matters contained in the business paper presented before the meeting. Show of hands. 5. Item 7, confirmation of minutes of the previous, I think it's meant to be previous, meeting. 7.1, confirmation of the minutes of the Audit and Finance Committee meeting held on the 19th of February 2014. Council confirmed that the minutes of the Audit and Finance Committee meeting held on 19th of February 2014 are true and correct, and we need a simple majority. So moved. So moved by Councillor Jacobs and seconded by Ed. And all in favour? Item 8, announcements of presiding member without discussion. Is there any announcement? Okay, so we will need to formalise a new presiding member, right, at the end of the meeting, since we've now got a formal resignation from Councillor Van Vliet. Can we do that at the end of the meeting?
Your discretion.
I believe it's the end of the meeting. Discuss at the end of the meeting. Item 9, any petitions, deputations, presentations, and submissions? Nil. Disclaimer, members of the public are cautioned against taking any action on council decisions on items on this evening's agenda in which they may have an interest. Until formal notification in writing by the town report has been received, decisions made at this meeting can be revoked pursuant to the Local Government Act 1995. Item 10, reports of officers. 10.1, Planning and Development Services. Is there any queries or points for clarification?
No point for clarification.
So moved by the seconded by.
Within that whole, is it within that whole, do we include the executive summary and the detail summary in your question? I've got a question.
So in terms of any queries or comments on the agenda item, it's on the whole agenda, any facts you want to raise?
I do have a query. I'm just down the bottom of page 10 there where it says that very basic analysis of the report shows that Form is in a stable financial position. position having a net surplus of over $1 million for 2013 compared to a figure of 13,000. I can see where it's actually got a surplus of over $1 million. And then, I know the figures are very, very small, but I thought that was, I took that as being the variance between actual and budget being surplus in maybe the cash flow position, but not. Do we need to clarify that perhaps? Or?
Through you, Madam Chair, I suspect that what the officer has done is looked at the operating entity of Thorn in terms of their own financial position as distinct from the contracted positions of managing our facilities. So I don't know that you'll see the reference to Thorn's financial position, because they're a not-for-profit who's contracted to undertake the management of the visitor centre and the gallery. And I have to double check, but I suspect that this is referring to their own financial position on their own financial statements, not related to the financial capacity of managing the visitor centre books or the...
So does that need to be worked a little bit differently, perhaps? We'll say that if somebody came in and, and said, OK, where's the $1 million? I mean, that's basically what I would be asking.
Well, I just question the relevance of the whole entity's financial position compared to looking at what's relevant to us.
If I may, through the Chair, perhaps only in terms of a risk assessment around their capacity to deliver on their contractual obligations and how that might link into their overall financial sustainability. I suppose if we looked at Form as a whole and had some concerns about their financial viability, that is potentially a risk to us in terms of delivering pure services. The only connection I think I would make.
Is it fair to have it in a public document saying what their opinions was?
Through the Chair, I would think probably not appropriate to be publishing their financials in a public agenda item, and if they were required in terms of oversight, if that was a contractual requirement, then I would suspect they should be distributed as a confidential attachment.
We've never had their full
position. So can we, I think perhaps for the sake of this exercise, I think we remove that sentence, starting with a very basic, because I haven't had that direct discussion with the reporting officer to understand where that comes from, because it doesn't reference anything on page 2 of anything. So perhaps we need to delete that for the time being. So a sentence starting with a very basic analysis and finished with page 2 in brackets will be removed.
Any points of clarification? I see the list of repairs and maintenance. Are all the repairs and maintenance all done now, or are there any other ongoing issues?
Through the Chair, I'm not aware of any outstanding issues, but I can certainly find out and send an email.
Any other points of clarification? 2.1.
Sorry, through you, Madam Chair. Just this is the first time you would have seen this template, I think, first time we've used this formally, with the officer's recommendation almost at the beginning of the agenda item.
Mm-hmm.
So just a clarification, it'll sit there now on the front page of our agenda items.
I think it's a good format.
Just through the Chair, if I may, it may be that the confidential attachment one, which is the financial reports of form, that is under confidential cover, whether all elected members or committee members have received a copy of that. Looks like this. Sorry, I know that's very small.
What is it, sir?
That is attachment one, which to this report, which has been is under confidential cover. And that shows the $1 million surplus. Whether everybody has a copy of attachment 1 to 10.1.1.
That's what we do. It's on page 51.
Thanks, Chris.
Following that brown.
I'm not sure that that's been provided.
Okay.
You did say it's in the pigeonhole, haven't you? I don't know if I've got a pigeonhole or not.
We can make sure that it's the confidential attachments are sent.
But is it part of our contract to ask them for their entire organisation's financials?
I have looked at the contract.
I've never seen that one.
I have a big contract, but by taking that element out of the report, this is all confidential to yourself.
It's actually not confidential.
No, I didn't think
it's
not. Has it just been left out?
Yeah.
Yes. Some copies.
It should be in everyone's hands.
Contract through Madam Chair. The contract may require the form provide that to the town as part of the reporting. We'll have to check that and then
check the contract and then we can decide.
Yeah. We've never been presented with this before, so
it could be that we were supposed to do it. So let's just find out if
So I have to check whether we've actually asked for it, or whether they and required it under the contract, or whether they have voluntarily provided it just to give confidence to the council that they're in a sound financial position and can manage our facilities.
I still think we should be aware of their need to act as an organisation and, not distribute their financials to everyone under a public name.
I agree. We just need to have a discussion to understand the basis behind why it's there and also whether they're aware that it's actually being used in a public document.
And I think if it's not part of their contract and it's not supposed to be provided as a public cover, I think we should quickly remove it and provide them an apology. It's not very professional.
Well, I'm sure it's not professional. They may be required to provide it to the council as part of the reporting requirements. So that's what we need to find.
Sorry, just through the chair, do we need to put an action note?
We'll take it as an administrative action to, one, determine why it's in the document in the first place, and then two, whether it's appropriate to be in the document.
And if it's not, provide an apology.
Yes.
Any further points of clarification? Recommendation, so it's a simple majority. This one is 10.2 engineering services. There is no. Move on to 10.3 community development. Is there any points of clarification?
So does this 2,300 now sort this out for the Bilba Music Festival? There's nothing there outstanding?
As I understand, yes it does.
Any other points of clarification on 10.3? So we need a mover and a seconder.
So moved.
Yep. And all? The Colin Matheson Clubhouse third quarter report. Do we have any points of clarification?
Yes, I can imagine just for you, with regards to page 45, just that Rovers have expressed an interest in continuing the managing the facility. Well, is there a business plan that Rovers, are we aware if there's a business plan or cash flow budget or anything like that that they provide? In particular with regards to the venue hire marketing strategy, because obviously if it's not making the dollars now, what is the strategy for them to move forward in the 2014-15 budget?
So I'll have to bring that back as a separate discussion item for the members as to what the current arrangements are and whether there needs to be any change to, well, from a council perspective, whether the council wants to consider anything different to the current formalities. And I'm not sure about the business case as distinct from just the agreement that the town put in has with Rovers Football Club for the management of the facility.
The question arises through the chair again is just because they're showing a deficit of $20,000 and if Jabat are no longer part of contributing, that sum will increase to near on $25,000. Deficit. So just an identification about where does that deficit, I know that part of the lease doesn't include that the council only partakes in the profit sharing of the facility, but what happens if there is a deficit and Rovers can't pay the amount.
So
just an identification that there's a risk there to the council.
So through you, Chair. Currently, any deficit rests with Rovers Football Club. Your point is, if they don't have the capacity to pay it, what actually happens?
Yes.
Any other points of clarification on 10.3.2?
Happy deficit.
Okay, so moved by Councillor Jacobs and seconded by Mayor.
Bill?
And all in favour? Then go to page 49, 10.3.3, Courthouse Gallery, Quarterly Review. Any points of clarification?
Madam Chair, I just made the comment on page 50, paragraph, it is only the first quarter form budget cycle. I was just a bit concerned that their sales were down and their employment costs were up. So it just makes an eye on it, doesn't it? Few reports. But apart from that, no comment.
Any other points?
So just why the concern?
Why? Well, only that the costs were exceeding their budget for the first quarter and their income is down on the first quarter. It may be a because of the hot weather, and it may solve itself over the next few months. I haven't got the background to it, but I'm just making a comment that seems relevant.
Because if they exceed their budget amount, then that's their problem.
Absolutely. Yeah. And as we've found, they've got plenty of dough in the bank to support it, I guess.
Pardon?
They've got plenty of money in the bank, as we found on the previous one, to support a loss.
It's just...
it's up to the chair, really.
Through the chair, just a comment on that. We're presenting only a quarter of the budget at the moment, but the sales, if they keep trending at that level there, they're going to be about 40% short on the budgeted figure of half, nearly, you know, $4.99. That's just keep an eye out on the future order.
We're not obligated to fill any gap.
All that makes a comment, I'm not saying you should do anything about it, but it's just keep an observation.
Any other points of clarification on 10.3.3?
So are we obligated to pick up any similar to no deficits?
Yeah.
But I guess it's a good point that you raised. So if the risk profile is there, that potentially if they can't pay, what happens then? Does the council, does the town have to come in and bail them out? I mean, is that something that we would have to do?
They're running a business like any person runs a business.
The risk still remains. The point is still valid, is that no different to what we just spoke about with Rovers Football Club. If they can't pay the bills and they're in a facility that the town's expecting to manage under contract, if they do fall over, then the risk does probably come back to the town. We're not suggesting there's any issues with form, and they look to be in a sound financial position as an overall entity.
Yep.
It's actually just something for us to keep our eye on in terms of operating costs versus revenue.
If that trend continues, that's when we'd probably start to ask a few more questions for the next.
Ask them to demonstrate how they're going to correct that.
Yeah.
To remain in accordance with their contract.
Any further points of clarification? Okay, officers' recommendation is on page 49. Needs a simple majority. So we need a mover and a seconder. Moved by Bill. Second by at all. GP housing quarter review, officer's recommendation on page 59. Is there any points of clarification?
No points, Madam Chair. So moved.
Seconded. Okay. All in favour? Next is page 64. 10.3.5, Town of Port Hedland Leisure Facilities Management Contract, third quarter. Officers' recommendations on page 64, the price is the majority. Is there any points of clarification?
Accepting that amendment to the table, would like to take it. Just a point of observation in relation to the Gratwick Aquatic Centre. I think it's important that we as an audit committee be aware that the potential income is 50%, dropping 50% of the income, but the expenditure is remaining the same. In fact, the expenditure is not much different. So if that trend continues and that is an issue, then we'd have to sort of consider that contract as to how they're going to attend to Gratwick in particular. The question is, are we doing anything at administration level to plan for that?
Through you, Madam Chair, there's a workshop next week with YMCA to go through all of their contracts and their operating costs and expenditure and their revenue streams on all three projects that they manage for us.
Just wondering if you can elaborate on the number of issues about the three facilities, and they're saying that some cannot be attributed to the YMCA. So what are the ones that the reasons for which it cannot be attributed to them?
To kick that discussion off through you, Madam Chair, that there were some significant changes in energy costs. Some of those, if I look at the, and I'll refer to the South Island Aquatic Centre in particular, where the pool heating, the water heater was actually operating at maximum load for a number of months and providing some exceptionally high utility charges. As we know, we now have the pool blankets for the South Island Aquatic Centre. We should see some normalisation now of the energy costs there. So that's one example. I think the delayed opening of Shack was another issue. And I think even the YMCA had attributed some additional costs to the success of the $1 children's entry fee, given they needed some additional staffing to cater for the numbers of people attending. So there are a variety of issues, but Madam Mayor, we have, I think, invited you to sit in on that workshop next week with the YMCA.
I'll make sure it's
on
my diary, thank you.
Sorry, Madam Chair, just with the financial implications, just to get a grasp on that. So we pay, the town pays a fee to the YMCA upon an agreed operational deficit for each facility. If that deficit is exceeded, do we still pay them? So if the deficit is, let's say, 50 grand and they hit 100, are we then obliged to pay them the management fee or not?
Through you, Madam Chair, not ordinarily, but what tends to happen in these cases is that the contractor may well be managing the contract to the best of their ability, but there may be circumstances where additional costs have been outside of their control.
Similar to those that we're...
Similar to some of those.
Yep.
And hence the meeting next week is to go through all those three operating areas and have a look at where there might be costs that we might accept that the town should cover off on.
Yep.
As well as being very, very clear with the contractor that perhaps some of those costs are their own doing and therefore they need to wear that additional cost within their own budget without expecting the town of Port Hedland to pick up the additional...
Yep. And then if there's any disagreement there, I guess there's do we sit in front of a panel to...
So, again, through the Chair, at the end of the day, the Council, the YMCA can always formally request the Council to consider a variation to the contract.
Yep.
And that would be the process we'd have to go through. If I can, just to add to that, what we are anticipating is that over the next 12 months, those facilities should start to bed down in what we call a normal operating manner. And I think in fairness to the town and the contractor, the first 12 months of the operation of the facilities has not necessarily been a smooth run for a variety of reasons. Some attributed to the delay in opening of the facilities, some to breakdowns of plant, which had to be then covered off through a defects liability period. And in actual fact, we've also even got a claim against the principal construction contractor for some of these matters. So whilst the YMCA are seeking to be reimbursed, the town may have to accept we need to pay the YMCA for some of those components. At the same time, we'll possibly be trying to recover those through a liability to the construction contract
claim.
Any further points of clarification on 10.3.5? Need a mover and a seconder?
So moved.
And all in favour?
Sorry, seconder was?
Thank
you.
Right, on to page 67, 10.4, corporate services. Policy review, investment policy. Officer's recommendation on page 67. Is there any points of clarification?
No points, Madam Chair, except to express that the policy is good. An improvement to the policy that had exist, so work to the alternate staff.
Any other further points of clarification? I don't need a move and a seconder.
I'll second it.
And all in favour? Thank you. is new. Item 11, late items as permitted by reciting member committee. The 11.1 is the financial reports inclusive of March budget review to council for a period of the 31st of March 2014. Is there any points of clarification?
Madam Chair, I was wondering if we could just at this for this item in particular note the report and defer the decision to accept the report to the OCM, just to give members the opportunity to properly consider and review its contents, because it's been pretty late in coming out. So if that's okay, I'd like to recommend that what we do here. Yeah. Sorry. Well, just note the report, but defer the acceptance of the report to the OCM, and that'll give us a little bit more time to look at its contents and review it properly, if that's okay. I don't know.
Madam Chair, perhaps the director might just want to give an overview.
Yes, sure, that'll be good.
You can determine how you want to deal with it.
Through you, Madam Chair. If I may, it looks like Grace has something to say on that one.
The decision that the Audit and Finance Committee would actually be making would be to recommend that council adopt it. So if you don't want to actually recommend that council adopt it, you can just go with point one, which is receive.
Yep.
But then what would then go to council would still be that whole recommendation.
That's fine. So
and that's
just
the intent.
So is that right?
Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so in terms of the quarterly budget review, this is obviously the last, outside of the standalone council resolution, this is effectively the last opportunity for review and amendments to the 2013-14 adopted budget. It's an incredibly comprehensive review with a large number of variations and some fairly significant ones, which are all set out in the covering report. And I'm happy to work through those variations if you would like. Essentially what the sum results of the variations proposes is an improvement in our projected unrestricted cash position of $617,000, which is a really pleasing result when you consider some of the budgetary challenges that we have faced over the course of this financial year. It also, as articulated in the report, does give us an opportunity to potentially deal with some of the YMCA and contractor claim issues that present a risk to the council and may need to be dealt with prior to year end. What this agenda item also seeks to do is establish two new reserves, being the Unfinished Works and Committed Works Reserve, the purpose of which is to transfer unspent muni-funded expenditure into that reserve, effectively quarantining the town's commitment to allow that work to be undertaken in the following financial year without impacting carry-forward balances. It smooths our bottom line result and allows council to focus on the impact of its core operations rather than one-off projects that may be carrying over multiple financial years. And as well as that reserve, creating a developer contributions reserve for things like public open space cash in lieu contributions that are made as part of the development consent process that may not have been quarantined in the past. This allows them to go into a dedicated reserve that will have a supporting register behind it so that we can clearly demonstrate the receipt of those funds their application to an appropriate purpose in line with the consent conditions. So that's the recommendation. In terms of major variations, just working through these, we've stuck with the system of F for favourable, U for unfavourable, and C for contra variations. Contra variations typically where it's a non-cash item, such as the writing off of rates, or where the item is funded, say, by way of corresponding grant or a transfer to or from reserve or loan funds. So the major variations within municipal fund, the increase in rates written off in accordance with the council resolution, that's to do with the rate spot rezoning to properties on Madigan Road and also Great Northern Highway. the efficiency dividend, so the $1.9 million that was factored into the original budget and was used essentially to sort of balance it up, has now been fully achieved, or budgeted to be fully achieved, which is a pleasing result. We're seeking to consolidate the interest on investment revenue accounts, which are currently spread over half a dozen or more general ledger codes, into one line item to make that process more readily understood. That's obviously a contra entry. Deferral of the Civic Centre upgrade to the 2014-15 budget, so that will appear in 14-15, and the draft proposes an increase in that amount from 4.5 to 5.5. That's wholly loan funded. Some savings recognised due to the fact that we haven't drawn down on the Civic Centre loan, so won't need to have any repayments this financial year. Amending the Northwest Festival budget so that, those expenses that will be incurred in the 14-15 financial year are matched by a corresponding budget into that financial year. Continuation of the South East Planning Project into 14-15 and the associated grant funding. A significant unfavourable variation is a reduction in town planning fee revenue and building regulatory fee revenue in line with a slowdown in development. Increased planning legal expenses, and this is largely attributable to the illegal dumping of the house and works the council is involved in there in terms of fixing or addressing that matter. Continuation of the scheme review into 14-15, a transfer to the newly created or soon to be newly created developer contributions reserve for public open space contributions that were received in the prior financial year and not quarantined. So they need to be transferred off to a restricted cash account. Continuation of Recreation Master Plan, South Headland Skate Park Project and the Wanangara Stadium signage projects, all into 14-15 and all funded by WAVE BHP. Partnership reserve money, noting that the South Headland Skate Park budget of $809,000 reflects the original portion of BHP funded, committed funding to that project, and the additional $1.3 million that they're providing will be recognised as a new transfer from reserve in 14-15. So it doesn't have any impact on 13-14. The deferral of the JD Hardy building upgrade, so that project is essentially being removed from the draft budget at this stage. There's no funding source to go with that. And whereas the 13-14 budget did show that being predominantly funded by way of the BHP Partnership Reserve with some supplementary grant funding from DSR as well. Some favourable variations at JD Hardy, in particular savings in utilities. We're recognising some increased expenditure on reticulation, repairs, maintenance and operations as significant works are being undertaken to improve that network and address some backlog issues. That is offset a few lines down by savings in sports grounds and sports and parks grounds maintenance. The Port Hedland Cemetery upgrade is recommended for deferral to the 14-15 financial year and is being incorporated in the draft budget with the view to using unallocated funds in the BHP Partnership Reserve to help deliver that project in conjunction with some grant funding that we've been successful in achieving from Lottery West. The deferral of the Scotty's Cafe project to 14-15, fully funded by way of a contribution from FMG. Deferral of the town's footpath replacement and extension program, so just that portion of work that will roll into 14-15 and be done in conjunction with the 14-15 programs. Recognising that Hamilton Road upgrade project will partly carry into 14-15. That's a $927,000 contra variation. It has, with it, some roads to recovery funding, a small amount of municipal funding and also regional road grant funding attached to it. Savings in the roads and drainage maintenance program. So within our roads and drainage maintenance accounts, there are some favourable variations, some unfavourable variations. The net impact of that is $152,000 favourable. Part of that is the amount of resources that have had to be diverted into cyclone cleanup related matters, and you'll see the $870,000 variation for that later on, which has inevitably taken away resources from our normal works programs due to having to deal with the aftermath of the cyclone. a reduction in service charges revenue. Again, that's linked to a slowdown in development rates and is consistent with the reductions in building regulatory fees and town planning fees. A transfer of the CLGF drainage upgrade works to the 14-15 budget that is funded by the Country Local Government Fund grants and currently sitting in unspent grants. This next item is the deferral of the Pipangara Road upgrades to future budget years, recognising some delays due to land tenure issues. And this is actually a favourable reaction. This is a fairly significant portion of municipal funding attached to this project. Now, I guess the benefit of this one, and I'm speaking purely from a financial perspective here, is that allows us to build this particular project into both the 14-15 and the 15-16 budget, recognising that there are some fairly extensive land issues that need to be resolved there before that project will actually be delivered on the ground. So they have been factored into the draft budget with the appropriate level of municipal funding as well as alternative source funding. That is subject to agreement by Regional Roads Group in terms of allowing that project to phase over different years and shifting those funding priorities. A deferral of the floodwater pump refurbishment project to 14-15, that is funded by way of a loan, and that loan has not been drawn down and isn't proposed to be drawn down until the 14-15 financial year. A deferral of both the Cattermole Court sales and the housing construction to the 14-15 financial year. A deferral of the land acquisition near the JD Hardy Centre to 14-15, that's $150,000, also funded by way of loan. Recognising a favourable variation due to proceeds from land sales to a land sale to Main Roads Department. And recognising increased profit from private works that the town's undertaken. And recognising an unfavourable reduction in anticipated insurance claim reimbursements. So that's the municipal fund. Waste fund has fewer variations but still some material ones, some favourable and unfavourable, in particular increased revenue from hazardous waste being asbestos and tyre disposal fees, $700,000, a reduction in anticipated revenue from liquid waste fees, just over $1 million. And recognising the contra variations for that cyclone response, income and expenditure, and making sure that we get those claims into Wandra well before the end of financial year so that we've got the best chance of having that cash at bank by 30 June. Some carry forward projects, we're being stage one of the Rain Man project, that will be partly some expenditure occurring in 13-14, but the majority of it falling into 14-15, along with stages two and three. So that was a three-year project that will now largely be done over the two financial years. Transfer of the landfill treatment ponds project to the 14-15 budget, $1.3 million. And recognising some increased external plant hire costs due to waste compliance matters and breakdowns of our own plant items. So in terms of waste fund, overall, they're all contra variations in that waste fund is wholly funded by way of transfers to and from reserves, but that just presenting them as contra variations probably doesn't tell the true story. And if we drill down into that as a standalone fund, we do really need to examine all of those entries as to whether they are favourable or unfavourable, albeit they have no impact on the municipal. The same philosophy can be applied to airport fund. So in terms of the airport fund material variations, we're addressing a resolution of council from back in 2008 in relation to a 2009 incentive program. And there was a resolution on the books that they would get a 50% reduction in fees for their first 3 months of operating both the international and domestic service, contingent upon them remaining in service for at least 12 months. When we've pushed back on Virgin for collection of outstanding receivables amounts owing to the town, they've come up with a copy of this resolution seeking a rebate relating to a few financial years ago. Reduction in passenger services revenue estimated at $200,000. A decrease in lease fees offset partially by associated reimbursements pertaining to those leases, so that's a $50,000 negative variation. And the next few ones touch on the presentation earlier from today with an upgrade of the perimeter fence instead of being partly funded by grant, will now need to be funded from our own source dollars. and will be undertaken at a cost of $1.5 million in 14-15. The resheeting of the runway, which was budgeted for $3.5 million in 13-14, carrying forward to 14-15. Recognising a budget allocation to commence services upgrades for water and sewer infrastructure at the airport in this financial year is a $200,000 unfavourable variation, and pavement repairs to be undertaken in 13-14, also a $250,000 unfavourable variation, and further the hire car redevelopment project expenditure being incurred in this financial year is $150,000. So in terms of our overall financial implications, as I mentioned at the beginning, we've had a fairly significant turnaround in our projected year-end position, particularly in light of the finalisation of those 12-13 financial statements that demonstrated a significant variation between the projected year-end position and the actual year-end position, and the impact that that then has on the 13-14 budget. So ignoring any movements in trade creditors and debtors, which will impact your unrestricted cash balance at report date, we're on track to restore unrestricted cash to a $600,000 level. However, as committee members will be aware, we do have some YMCA contractual issues that do need to be resolved. This provides the town some additional financial flexibility to resolve those matters, and it places us in a really sound position. Sorry, I'll rephrase that. It places it in a much better position than where we were at the beginning of the financial year to deliver on a 14-15 draft budget. So that's quite pleasing. Noting in terms of the attachments that the quarterly budget review in attachment one is a standalone document as compared to the monthly financials, which are prepared at the end of March, but obviously don't factor in the unapproved budget variations at this point in time. Separately, we have attachment three being the accounts paid under delegated authority March 2014. So if I can just offer some comment on that. We've obviously had a number of questions from elected members as to why that needs to be confidential, and indeed from members of the community. So in terms of listening to that feedback, or those questions, we've gone back to the department and sought their particular views on the matter. And what they've said is that, yes, a report does need to be in public, but the report that we had typically been presenting in public is not acceptable because it has far too much detail and does impinge on people's privacy around their financial and personal affairs. And they have recommended that we seek to do a modified version that appropriately balances that public disclosure so satisfies the legislative requirements without impinging on people's right to privacy. So staff will commence work on a revised format that will see the right level of information being presented at a more summarised level, again, so that we're not publishing people's personal and financial affairs in a public document, and then provide a greater degree of disclosure to our community. So these ones are still under confidential because they're still in that highly detailed form. We are also sending examples of what a number of other councils are doing to the department so that we can get some further feedback from them on which ones they think are acceptable, and they've yet to advise upon that they like. So that's my summary of the QBR. A detailed list of variations is set out on the 24 pages of the variations listing. So happy to take any questions on those.
Can I just reiterate the substantial turnaround? You know, if you're looking at a total figure, you're looking at probably a $9 million plus turnaround to the third quarter budget review, which is very, very substantial. Just give credit to Claire and the finance for doing that.
So where did you use the eraser? Why did we discount?
Just on all the planning budgets, they've got huge budgets.
So she toe shoes.
I just had a couple of queries relating to what you said before that. In particular around in the municipal fund, we talked about the Jodie Hardy upgrade. I was wondering if there was any way that we could apply to reallocate the DSR funding rather than returning it to them, since we have friendly people in the department now, one ex-director of community development in particular. Could we perhaps investigate if there's any way that we could retain the funds and reallocate its purpose still to be for youth, you know, for the matter of youth, but is that possible? Can we investigate that?
Through the chair, yes, probably no.
No?
Simply that we were at, I won't say at loggerheads, but we'd been under some pressure from DSR to expend that money over the last 24 months, I believe. So the funds, well, I don't think we've actually received the cash, but we actually indicated we could not complete that project. And again, my experience with DSR is they actually appreciate when local governments come to them honestly and say you can't complete the project. Return the funds doesn't mean that we cannot go back and reapply. So I think the discussions now need to be about re-scoping that whole program or that whole project, and then looking at how it might be funded to get the outcomes that we hope to achieve for the long-term betterment of that facility.
So, through the chair again, so we can't use it still at the JD, but for a smaller part of the whole project. We can't do that. It's got to be for the project.
That's correct. The applications that are submitted through the chair, the applications that are submitted to the Community Sport and Recreation Facility Funding Program require a business case. They require 1/3 maximum contribution. Well, sorry, they will only give a maximum 1/3 contribution by DSR through that program, and it's for specific purposes. And those funds were essentially for the outdoor court facility, and they would not allow those funds then to be just automatically put back into another part of that project. Look, long story short, we will certainly need to re-scope that whole JD Centre project and then look at what funding mechanisms we can apply for, including DSR through the CSRWF program and Lotteries West and any other stakeholders that might be willing to come to the table.
Just a couple more in relation to the waste fund. You indicated increased in external plant hire costs. I'm just wondering if we could, or if there is already in the pipeworks a cost-benefit analysis of the appropriateness of the expenditure, rather than, my question is, why are we paying to hire equipment that we might be better off buying that will have a greater life?
Through the chair, I'll defer to Russell, but I think we've now got the equipment that we were...
That was the landfill compactor that we ordered, but it's just a lead time on the delivery of the landfill compactor. So we had the dozer on dry hire, which had a very good rate on that machine, but we've only just taken delivery of the landfill compactor that we ordered. It's just delivery getting to Australia, really. So that machine's offline now, we have the landfill compactor working.
So you'd expect the external contract machinery hire would be down to
minimal?
In the 2014-15?
Yeah.
Okay, right, no worries.
If I may, through the chair, on that, we've just been through the process of implementing or re-implementing our internal plant hire framework and charges, so we'll be better placed to do analysis of all our internal plant fleets, plus look at any external plant fleet that we hire and do some more of the cost-benefit analysis sitting behind that about what's the appropriate mix of owned versus wet or dry hire plant. I think it'd be fair to say that at this point in time we don't have a history of plant running costs by individual plant item that allows us to take to undertake that work. But with a re-implemented plant fund, we're in the process of building up some of that data.
I was going to say, just on the waste fund, one that's just come up that didn't have the opportunity to be in here is the steel that we're negotiating with BHP at the moment to take into the landfill, which is a significant revenue into 14-15 budget.
Just had one more, but I can wait for the airport committee to bring that one to.
Just going back to the hire, it's fair to say that the town would have been earning some income out of that. On the basis, I mean, we've expended $480,000, but we would have been earning some income in that time anyway.
Well, the way the landfill operates, all the industry pay to go to the landfill.
Yep.
So that's part of what happens. So the machinery that's required, we're not. It's required to carry out our compliance activities at the landfill. So that's sort of what it does.
Right.
But yeah, the landfill in itself, through the gate fees, obviously has revenue coming in that way. So
yeah,
that's how it sort of works.
Yeah, I guess the point I was making was there's a positive on the other side.
Yeah.
At the bottom, well, to a degree.
To a degree.
Any further points of clarification?
No.
Thanks.
Councillor Jacob, you were wanting to receive it, but put the other bit up to the OCM,
isn't it? So receive it as in point one.
Yep.
And then leave the order. Yep.
So item 12, motions with previous notice have been given is nil. Item 13, confidence items is nil. Item 14, is there any applications for leave of absence?
Madam Chair, I was just wondering if we know when the next Audit and Finance Committee meeting is.
Through the chair, typically a quarterly budget review would be presented 2 months following year end, so it would be the week before the August OCM. But given that will be in financial statement preparation, I guess we need to consider the merits of presenting interim year end figures and then coming back potentially a month later with final year-end figures, and whether it's appropriate to have one in August still to deal with things like community funding applications and then have another one in September, or defer them all to September.
The only other thing we might want to consider is whether we might bring to the Audit Committee a discussion paper on the tender of audit, given that the current audit contract expires, whilst I'll complete the 13-14 audit statements, we may want to start the process of tendering for the new audit. So we may want to come back have a standalone meeting just for a discussion around the terms and scope for outgoing year audits.
So we would potentially have some more financial policies to come up as well to the committee.
So I don't think there's any need to meet before August. So that's really the key message.
Leave absence from the 5th of August to the 11th of August.
The most elected members will be at the time because of the local government convention. So we certainly would look to hold any meetings while the majority of council are at the local government convention.
So do you still want that leave? Just the 3 extra days, I think, from the 9th to the 12th,
then
the
11th.
I'll be back on the 12th.
From the 9th to the 11th. 9th to 11th
August.
It's an extra 2 days, 3 days.
Yeah.
9th to 11th.
No. Yeah, you leave it. If we're talking about an August one, I'm fine. Yep.
20th of August for the next meeting.
Yes.
What
date? The 20th, which would be the third Wednesday of August.
That's the proposed next meeting.
Go back to
you. Okay. I need a mover and a seconder. Item 15 is closure. Date of next meeting is the 20th of August 2014. There being no further...
Are we going to talk about the new appointment of the new chair?
You're going to bring it to the end.
Oh, yeah.
So, through the chair, Grace was just advising that there's an agenda item.
Grace, for a new audit finance committee member, renew our next
to defer it to the 20th of August meeting. Yep. So the first order of business after the meeting's open will be the election of the presiding member.
All right.
Okay, everybody.
Number 15.2, closure. There being no further business, the deputy presiding member declared the meeting closed at 13.02.
Thank you. Thank you. Finished. See you later.
Well, look, from here, that's just all I like. Just stay on.
I'll assume Julie is on.
Very careful though.
Yeah.